Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. Tribal leaders, artists, attorneys, and visionaries are among the small list of people who are celebrated this week for their positive difference they're making in their communities. The National Center for Native American Enterprise Development is recognizing their list of 40 people under 40 years old who are setting an example for others. We'll talk with three pioneering tribal leaders on that list about work they see ahead. That's coming up after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Jill Freitas, filling in for Antonia Gonzalez. Native women are a key part of the business world, and women leadership was discussed this week at the Reservation Economic Summit in Las Vegas. The event is put together by the National Center for American Indian Enterprise Development. Yon Tiger is a travel attorney and has a business called Show Nation. When it comes to women-led businesses, Tiger says women bring something different, including a different mindset than their male counterparts. And also, she says Native women are often the breadwinners for their families.
Sometimes they're the main person in their family that's providing an income. And it's not always just because they're a single mother, it's just because of circumstances. Sometimes they're the ones that are providing the money for the family and for their, and even outside of their immediate family. A lot of times they're the caregivers for our parents and our siblings and, you know, nieces and, you know, whoever needs the help. We're charged with that responsibility.
Margot Gray is a board member of the National Center. She wears many hats and has been a part of RES for many years. She says women-led businesses are continuing on the up and up. And when it comes to giving women, especially Indigenous women, advice, she says make sure to have a plan.
Do your homework. And I'm telling you, you can go to Barnes & Noble or any bookstore and look how to get into business. You know, just follow a process. I just encourage everyone, if you have that dream, don't overthink it. Do your homework and then be ready to take that risk.
Keynote speakers this week had words of encouragement for attendees like Dakota Lewis, a professional bull rider from Browning, Montana. He says when Indigenous people put their mind to work, they can do powerful things, including Native youth.
You know, dream big, work hard, and just believe in yourself. You know, it's going to be hard at times, but it's going to be worth it. Anything that's worth it is, you know, definitely going to test you. And just know that you're not alone. Everybody struggles through things. There's good days and there's better days. And just to know that Creator has a plan for all of us and just keep pushing forward. And the only limit is the limit you put on yourself.
More than 4,000 people are gathered together, including tribal leaders, members of Congress, federal agency representatives, state and local officials, and top CEOs to discuss entrepreneurship, business, and mentorship in Indian Country. The summit wraps up Thursday. Competition is heating up at the Arctic Winter Games, an event that many have dubbed as the Olympics of the North. The Matanuska-Susitna Valley near Anchorage is hosting the games this year, the first time the international competition has been in Alaska in a decade. So far, Team Alaska leads the ulu count, medals that are shaped like a Native ulu, a carved knife for cutting fish and game. The Yukon and Northwest Territories are in second and third place. Besides the United States, which is represented by Alaska, the Arctic nations include Canada, Greenland, Norway, Sweden, and Finland. The athletes range in age from 11 to 18. At opening ceremonies last weekend, Alfred Tellman, an elder from the Kinnick Tribal Council, welcomed the crowd.
Whether you win or not, you're all winners. Whether you medal or not, you're all winners. You've come a long ways to get here. You've done a lot to be here.
One of the big challenges for Greenland's team was raising the money to travel. But Carl Davidson, who is the Greenlandic government's official representative for the Games, says sports are one way to help young people balance both modern and traditional life.
The sports world in Greenland is very much influenced by the European style. And the Arctic Games are very much less to find in Greenland.
Davidson says Indigenous games like the one-foot high kick have gained popularity in his country, thanks to Greenland's participation in the Arctic Winter Games. The event encompasses a wide range of competitions, from winter sports like figure skating and speed skating to downhill and cross-country skiing. But the Dene Games and other Indigenous sporting events make the Arctic Winter Games a one-of-a-kind event. Alaska Governor Wally Hickel and other Arctic Nation leaders founded the Games in 1959 to bring circumpolar peoples together. The manager of this year's Games, Karen Land, says they will help Alaska build bonds for the future.
It is very special to celebrate that. And the great thing about the Games is that the participants all come and they're strangers, but by the end of the week, they are friends and lifelong friends. And it's just amazing to watch.
The Games run through Saturday. I'm Jill Freitas.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the American Indian College Fund, providing millions of dollars of scholarships to Native students every year. Applications are accepted through May 31st at collegefund.org or by phone at 800-766-FUND. The Indian Arts and Crafts Board promotes Indian artists of federally recognized tribes through its online source directory. Information on this no-charge opportunity available at doi.gov/IACB. Who support this program.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling, and I'm your host, Sean Spruce. Three tribal leaders are among this year's 40 Under 40. That's the list of people recognized by the National Center for American Indian Enterprise Development at RES every year. Today we'll hear about their plans for their tribes and their goals for advocating for Native issues locally and on the national stage. All three of our guests today are from California tribes, so we'll learn more about the issues in that state and how they can inform issues that all Native Americans face. And we'll focus in on the issues they are most passionate about. You can join our conversation, too. Connect with our three 40 Under 40 leaders by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's the direct line to our studio hotline. You can speak with our guests. You can ask them a question. You can share a comment or just give them a shout-out. 1-800-99-NATIVE. Our first guest joins us here at Caesar's Palace, live, Chairwoman Merrill Picard. She is the chairwoman of the Bishop Paiute Tribe and a recent honoree of the 40 Under 40 Award. Welcome to Native America Calling, Chairwoman Picard, and congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Well, tell us a little bit about the award ceremony last night. I was there. There were a lot of people, a lot of music, a lot of good food. What'd you think?
I think it was a beautiful event. You know, lots of people there to celebrate with us. And it was amazing to meet the other recipients and to celebrate together. So I had a really great time.
And what about just the overall Reservation Economic Summit? Did you enjoy the opportunity to network? Did you like the panels, the discussions? What were your key takeaways?
Yeah, I feel like I always have a great time at this conference and take away some great information. I feel this time around the tourism panels were really inspirational for me as far as things that I want to see us implement in our area. We're a highly sought after tourism area, Death Valley, Yosemite National Park. So we have a lot of great tourism in the area that my tribe is located at.
Well, tell us more about your tribe, Chairwoman, Bishop Paiute Tribe, where exactly you folks are located. We have listeners all over the country. They might not be familiar with parts of California, about how big your tribe is with enrollment and what it was that inspired you to pursue tribal leadership.
That's a big question. So our tribe is located in about central California in the Owens Valley, eastern Sierra Nevadas. So we sometimes aren't even, people in California aren't even familiar with where we're at because we're hidden in the mountains. But the Bishop Paiute Tribe has a little over 2,400 tribal members, and we have about 864 acres of land. So we're a very small land base for the amount of tribal members that we have. Historically, our area ancestral lands were pretty much taken from the Department of Water and Power, and so we're considered an area that's landlocked and will never really grow. So we've been fighting for water rights and land rights. We're starting to kind of buy land back ourselves just to acquire land. So that's kind of what's going on now for our tribe. And, you know, I think what inspired me to run is I wanted our young kids to see good leaders. And at the time I was working in our education center and I was the director there, and I just wasn't seeing that. And I wanted our kids to go away, get educated and come back and be in roles like this, but I wanted them to see good leaders to look up to. So
well, we had an opportunity to talk a little bit during the trade show, and I really was inspired when I heard your story, how you you were called into service just by wanting to be a role model and wanting to inspire young tribal members from your community. And I want to talk more about the water rights and some of the other issues, but I want to talk a little bit more about how that's working out for you. And what do you hear from the community, and especially the young people who you were so motivated, and you're doing this in many ways to be that role model. Do you think it's working? Are they giving you good feedback?
Yeah, definitely. I think even a lot of the students who are now college graduates and coming back, who were students of mine when I first came home and was working with them, they're excited to see me in this role. And I also just want to be that role model for young women, you know, to know that they could step into these roles. And moms, you know, I have a great support system. I'm actually a boy mom. I have three boys. But I want women to know that they could be in positions of leadership. We've only had, I think, one other tribal chairwoman for our tribe. So this is, you know, a very unique kind of opportunity to see a woman in the chair position for our tribe. So, yeah.
Now let's go back to the water rights, and water challenges are not unique to the Bishop Paiute tribe. Many tribes in California and throughout the West are confronted with similar issues. What are some possible solutions that you're working on to combat this issue and get the water you need into the community?
So we actually have a commission, the Owens Water Commission, that kind of helps to advocate for the Owens Valley Paiutes. So not just the Bishop Paiute tribe, but there's other Paiute tribes that are part of this consortium, and they really help to advocate for the water rights for the Paiutes in the valley. And right now we're working with a lobbyist and kind of just like regathering information. But our people, historically, they were they created the different but you know, we had men who really moved the water around in the land. Irrigators is the word I was looking for, sorry. Okay. We had ancient irrigation systems in our area that actually the Department of Water and Power ended up coming in and utilizing. And of course, some of them aren't in use anymore. But again, we knew how to move the water through the land so that the land could really flourish and the plants can really thrive. And that's not happening anymore. And it's drying up everywhere. And now DWP is also going after Mono Lake, which is another really dear to our hearts lake, because it's a salt lake. I'm also a descendant of the Kasetika tribe, which is located there in Mono Lake. They're a non-federally recognized tribe. But again, as a tribal leader who is from a federally recognized tribe, I always try to support the chair there and really advocate for what's going on there and sit at the table of those kinds of conversations that are happening.
Well, this is a really pressing issue, and I know you have other issues that you're confronting, challenges. Let's talk a little bit about your leadership style and just what's your philosophy in terms of being a tribal leader, working in your community, both locally, but then, of course, you're also very present on the national stage, and you network with other tribes, not just in California, but other states as well.
Yeah, I think it's really important to do that. And as a tribal leader, I guess my leadership style is to be a servant leader. I really feel that tribal leaders are there to serve their community. And in doing that, you have to listen and you have to be able to hear that feedback from your community, pull up your sleeve and help out. We have a lot of community events and I'm always there helping any way that I can, because I feel like our staff are the consistency and our tribal leaders come and go. So I feel like I'm there to serve them and to help them out. And then, yes, on the national level, I recently was appointed to the Secretary's Tribal Advisory Committee, but I'm a representative for the Pacific region. So really trying to network with other tribal leaders in California so that our voice is being heard at the national level. And then you know, I think local level is really, really important. I don't think maybe in the past we focused too much on that, but it's truly important because we are surrounded by the town of Bishop. So we've really built a relationship with the city council and then the Inyo County Board of Supervisors as well. So we're meeting with those entities quarterly as well.
Now, Chairwoman, so many tribes, you know, we hear so much about the importance of elders, and you don't see a lot of young tribal leaders, especially, you know, chair people like yourselves. And what do you think it is about being under 40 years of age that uniquely qualifies you to serve your people?
Well, I think my experience and my education and the things that I've just done in my community as a young person leading up to becoming the chairperson has really put me in a unique opportunity or position to be able to lead the tribe, because I worked in numerous social services positions, education, language manager. So I had a lot of different experiences before I even came on to council. So I think that helped me to get a good start in being the lead of the tribe.
That's just so wonderful to hear, and we're going to take a short break here, but I want to thank you so much again for joining us here. I know it's still early. You're on your way home, so I want to wish you safe travels back to California and much success going forward. And again, congratulations, 40 under 40.
Thank you. It was my honor.
Absolutely. Listeners, give us a call here at Native America Calling, 1-800-99-NATIVE, if you would like to join the discussion or if you would like to give a shout out to one of our young tribal leaders today. Let us know. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Lawmakers in Canada are considering a law to outlaw sterilizing women without their consent. The proposal stems from a modern case involving an Indigenous woman. It comes as Inuit women in Greenland are also demanding compensation for forced sterilizations in the past. We'll explore the latest on the issue on the next episode of Native America Calling.
I'm Michael, and I used to smoke. I never used to think about breathing. Then my left lung collapsed, and I was diagnosed with COPD. Now I think about breathing all the time. I'm on an oxygen machine so I can breathe. I take medicine so I can breathe. My tip is, enjoy the breaths you don't have to think about. You don't know how long you'll have them.
Smoking can cause COPD. You can quit. For free help, visit cdc.gov/quitnow. A message from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Thanks for joining us today on Native America Calling. I'm your host, Sean Spruce, from Las Vegas, Nevada, where we are this week at the Reservation Economic Summit. Our three guests today are recent recipients of the Native 40 Under 40 Awards. They're among the community leaders who have distinguished themselves with a high level of service. If you'd like to join this conversation, give us a call right now. We've got the phone lines open, 1-800-996-2848. Let's now meet our next guest today. Chairman Drew Alejandre. He is the chairman of the Paskenta Band of Namlaki Indians, and he's here in Las Vegas, Nevada. He's talking with us. Chairman, welcome to the show, and congratulations on your award last night.
Thank you, and thanks for having me here today.
Absolutely. Well, what did you think of the ceremony last night? Did you enjoy it? And what was it like networking with some of the other 40 under 40 recipients? Who impressed you? And what other people would you like to, you know, just network with in the future?
Yeah, it was fantastic, you know, to join other recipients at the ceremony. You know, the ceremony was great. Very honored to be an awardee and to be recognized in this way. It's very special for me, you know, coming from a small tribe in Northern California. And, you know, I don't usually, I've never received anything like this, so it's really special. But, you know, again, to be able to network with others, it was great. And, you know, I come from an art background, so it's cool to see a lot of artists that were being recognized. So that's always fun to network. I still love to participate in my own artwork. And so, yeah, it was really neat.
Well, let's talk about, you mentioned you come from a small community. You serve a small group of people, but very passionate, very, you know, obviously a very proud Native nation, Northern California, the Paskenta Band of Namlaki Indians. So for our listeners who might not be familiar with Northern California, give us a little bit of geography and tell us a little bit more about your people.
Yeah, so we are located in the greater Northern California in a small town of Corning. Our reservation sits right on the Interstate 5, so we are about an hour and a half above Sacramento. A 300-member tribe. We were actually re-recognized in 1994. So, you know, we're relatively a new tribe. And within our membership, we're a young tribe as well.
And you represent that, being, we were talking earlier, and, you know, not only are you the chairman of your tribe, but you have been the chairman of your tribe for 8 years. So you're not new to this. You are a veteran tribal leader. You were, 25 years old when you were first elected. So that's just amazing. I mean, what was that like, being that age and coming into tribal leadership? And I imagine you've learned a lot, and you probably experienced some challenges and maybe a few hard knocks along the way. Talk a little bit about your career arc and just your journey as a leader.
Absolutely. You know, I never saw myself in tribal politics or being a tribal leader. You know, I was an art kid. I did graphic design. I thought that was going to be my life. But my uncle, who was the chairperson at the time, you know, he appointed me to the tribal secretary position. So I spent 2 years there, and then he decided he did not want to run when his term was up 2 years later. So a couple of my fellow council members and our tribal administrator, who has been my mentor and someone I really respect, one of my heroes, you know, he came to me and he said, you know, I really think you should run for chair. You know, and I was like, what? You know, I did a double take at him, and, you know, he's like, no, I'm serious. You heard me. I believe in you, and I think you can do this. You know, and I was really taken back. And so I told him, you know, let me go home and think about this, you know. And as I was mentioning earlier, our tribe is re-recognized, and that was led by my grandfather, who was our first chairperson. And so, you know, I thought about him and what he did for me, you know, how he positioned our people to have what we have today. He laid the foundation for us. And I thought about that. And I thought about my ancestors and all my people, and the purpose of this and the reasons behind it. And with that, you know, I gave him a call back and I said, you know what, I'll do it. And so I ran for the position, and I won. And here I am 8 years or 10 years later, actually. It's been an incredible journey. You know, my council and the people around me were very patient with me, learning tribal politics and learning just every avenue of this, because I had no idea. I had no idea. And it really took a long time for me to have a lot of confidence in this position. But here I am, and I have that today, and I feel good about it, and I'm so passionate about what I get to do for my people, you know, creating those resources and opportunities and just being someone that's a voice within Indian country.
I've always been fascinated by the fact that our tribal nations, not only are they so culturally diverse, but we have very different sizes in terms of populations. I mean, you've got some tribes with hundreds of thousands of members, like the Navajo Nation or the Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma. And then your tribe, for example, is 300 members. And I'm familiar with other tribes, you know, they have less than 500 members. I'm just interested to know, that must be a challenge sometimes. I mean, I imagine, like, you're, you know, hanging out in the community, you go to a store, and you probably, people just think they can just walk right up to you and ask any question. Your phone probably never stops ringing, from serious issues, you know, on the national level to just, hey, chairman, you know, my water's out, or I've got an issue with my house, or something like that. So I imagine you've got to really, really be adept at just delegating authority, but also just managing the concerns and the issues that people have in the community that are, you know, kind of big picture, and then just some smaller issues that are just as important to them.
Absolutely. But I think we've done a really good job of really establishing a foundation that helps all our members in any issue that they have. You know, anytime there are issues, we bring that to the table and we talk about it. Because a lot of the times there are similar issues that are within our entire community, not just one member, but maybe 10, 20. So it's like, how do we combat that? So bringing it to the table, discussing it, and maybe building out a program or just finding solutions for that. You know, I have an incredible council, an incredible team, and that's what it's about, coming together and making sure we're taking care of the people, working together, sharing ideas, and finding solutions.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your tribal economic base. Now, as you mentioned earlier, you're situated there along Interstate 5. Lots of traffic, a lot of travel in and out of that area. What kinds of projects do you have going on currently, and what's the main driver of the economy there?
Yeah, so on our reservation, we have our biggest asset is our casino property, the Rolling Hills Casino. Right now, we're focusing on infrastructure, roads, bridges. Right now, there's only one way in and one way out of our reservation. So we're focused on getting a on and off ramp, a second exit. But again, we're focused on infrastructure, making sure that everything is in place for future economic development. We're working on a large microgrid with backup battery system, and then, you know, wastewater, water, all of those things that come into play when you're thinking of economic development. You know, you got to have all those pieces in order to continue to build. You know, there comes a time where you hit capacity, so we need to expand that out to be able to do those projects that we want to do.
Now, we heard earlier from Chairwoman Picard about the water issues facing tribes in Southern California. Now, do you face similar water challenges in Northern California or other types of environmental issues that you've got to be dialed into?
Yeah, so with water, especially in Northern California, a lot of farming takes place. But we have one of the largest water tables right on our reservation, which we've been very fortunate. There are some water issues, and we've always speak up and make sure that, you know, those are things that we're keeping an eye on and making sure that, you know, we're in the at the table, sharing our voice and opinions on it. But we actually just started our TIPO program, and, you know, making sure we're taking care of the ancestral territories. The challenge with that has been, you know, working with these agencies, letting them know that the tribe is there and that they need to work with us whenever they're disturbing the grounds of our Aboriginal territories, because a lot of times, you know, our ancestors or things of that come from our ancestors are in these grounds. So we're always trying to protect that. And it's been a challenge with them because they don't want to respect the tribe and have these conversations and bring us in to the conversation. So we've been combating that quite a bit lately, but we're getting there. We're making it known that we're there, and we're going to be strong about it and have a voice.
Now, you shared earlier your tribe gained federal recognition about 30 years ago, and there's a number of tribes in California that are currently working to become federally recognized, and we're seeing that, you know, on the national level as well. And there's been a lot of back and forth between tribes who are federally recognized versus tribes who don't have federal recognition, and it's really in some ways kind of polarizing parts of Indian country and setting some tribes against each other. And what's your thought on that with regard to tribes that are working towards federal recognition and tribes that are pushing back against that? Sometimes it seems like, you know, they see like competition from other tribal nations.
Yeah, you know, in my own opinion, I think if your nation is doing it the right way, if you're going about it the right way, taking the necessary steps and following the process, then you, absolutely deserve to be recognized. And there's a tribe up north from us that we've actually helped them out and advocated for them and wrote letters on their behalf to be able to help them get recognized, because they are within their Aboriginal territories and they are who they say they are. And it's a tough process. You know, I had an opportunity to talk with my grandfather about it quite a bit. And I know what he went through. So it is a tough process, and I understand that there are tribes who oppose it. And I'm not exactly sure what the reasons are behind that. But, you know, there's some tribes that are trying to be reestablished that aren't going about it the right way. So I think that's some of the things that cause these frictions. But again, if you're going about it the right way, you're following the processes, there's no doubt in my mind that these should be recognized.
Well, obviously you're a busy person. I imagine you're constantly in meetings, you're constantly taking phone calls. But when you do have some downtime, what do you like to do in your free time? What kind of hobbies do you have? What do you do when you're not out there serving your people?
Yeah, I love to hang out with my Frenchie, Brody. It's my baby. I love music. So I travel all over the country, going to music festivals. I go to a lot of concerts. You know, I still do graphic design. I love to draw. I love to read. You know, just some of those hobbies. But other than that, you know, the work keeps me busy. And like I said, again, you know, I'm very passionate about it. I love it. And I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world.
Well, speaking of music, speaking of art, another 40 Under 40 recipient was the actress Lily Gladstone, who was nominated for her Academy Award for, of course, Killers of the Flower Moon. Unfortunately, she was not in attendance last night for the ceremony. Real disappointed.
Oh, I was super bummed that she wasn't there. I was totally hoping I can get a picture with her, you know. But, you know, it's really awesome to know that we got to share the platform with her. We got awarded with her alongside her, you know, even though she wasn't present, you know, to be known that we were in the same class is amazing. And, you know, she's amazing. She's an inspiration to tribal nations. And more importantly, she's an inspiration to young Native women and women in general. So it's a beautiful thing that what she's doing. And she's, you know, kicking down doors for us.
Well, as we mentioned earlier, you've been tribal chairman now for 8 years, and you're well under the age of, I mean, they could have held off on this award for a number of years and you'd still be eligible. But what are your plans for the future, Chairman Alejandre? I mean, how much longer do you want to serve as tribal chairman? And do you have other types of career aspirations beyond tribal leadership?
Well, you know, I'm actually running for my third term this September, so I hope to be back in my position, but alongside one of the fellow guests here, James Siva, we're both a part of the Tribal Leadership Council, where we're trying to create tools and share knowledge for inspiring and upcoming tribal leaders, and even current tribal leaders, giving them the tools and resources to be able to give back to their communities and have a strong voice in Indian country. So that's one of the projects that we've been working on. But, you know, there has been a lot of thought. If I don't make it back into tribal leadership, then I would run for assembly for my region. So that's something I'd like to do. But, yeah, you know, I just... Again, I'm so passionate about helping my people and helping Indian country in general. So, you know, anything of that I can do, any platform that I can be, I want to be that and be a resource to my people, all people.
So the California State Assembly could be a goal at some point in the future, and that's really exciting. And, of course, you're not too far from Sacramento, so it wouldn't be a hard commute, would it?
That's right. That's right. You know, and I actually went to school in Sacramento, so I love Sacramento. It's like my second home. But yeah, it would be amazing to have that opportunity.
Well, Chairman Drew Alejandre, I want to thank you as well for joining us here on Native America Calling this morning. Congratulations on the award last night, and just wish you all the best of success going forward. We're going to have to take another break, but safe travels home back to Northern California.
Thank you so much, and it's been an honor to be on this, so thank you.
Thank you. Listeners, stay with us. We will be right back with Chairman James Siva.
Does your club, institution, or other group need custom-branded apparel? A wide variety of T-shirts, hoodies, and much more, all custom-printed or embroidered, are available from NativeScreenPrinting.com, a division of SkyScreen Printing, who support this program. Lakota-made, indigenous-first medicines and eco-friendly personal care products are small-batch prepared in the Lakota traditions using sustainably harvested natural and organic ingredients, and all can be found at LakotaMade.com, who support this show.
You are tuned in to Native America Calling today. I'm Sean Spruce. We are live at the Reservation Economic Summit in Las Vegas, Nevada. We're joined by three Native people who are recognized this year for their outstanding service. They're on this year's list of 40 Under 40, celebrated last night at the Reservation Economic Summit here at Caesar's Palace. Our next guest joining us live is Vice Chairman James Siva. He is the Vice Chairman of the Morongo Band of Indians. Vice Chairman Siva, I want to welcome you to the show and also congratulate you on being a 40 Under 40 awardee.
Thank you so much, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here with you today. Thank you.
Well, absolutely. And here we are in Las Vegas. We are surrounded by these huge palatial casinos, but you're no stranger to the gaming industry. You are heavily involved in gaming issues and gaming leadership there in the state of California. Let's talk about that a little bit, about your role there with CNIGA. And obviously, you must be pretty comfortable in casino spaces.
Yeah, gaming has really become kind of my bread and butter. So I currently serve as the chairman of the California Nations Indian Gaming Association, also known as CNIGA. I was just reelected to my third term of the association. CNIGA is the largest regional-based tribal gaming association. So we currently represent 52 tribes from across the state, from up at the north in Redding all the way down into San Diego County. And as many people are aware, there's been a lot of very interesting gaming issues happening in California. Sports betting is kind of all over the map, and that's been the main center of discussion. But we also have a number of other issues related to gaming, related to our gaming compacts that have been really prevalent for us. And we've really had to do a lot of really work in kind of consensus building in the last few years.
I had the pleasure of going to not this year's CNIGA conference, but last year it was held down at Sequan, and it was a great event. And I met a lot of really interesting people. For folks who might be listening to the show and might not be familiar so much with tribal gaming, and here we are in Las Vegas, how would you compare and contrast gaming here in Las Vegas, Nevada? What we see here on the Strip, Caesar's Palace, we're looking at the Bellagio across the way, MGM. How would you compare these properties, compare and contrast the industry here, just kind of the theme or the energy of this type of gaming versus what we have in tribal gaming in communities, not only in California but elsewhere?
I think it goes back to the inherent reason why those companies are in gaming and why tribes are in gaming. Tribes are in gaming to provide central government services for our people. And you can feel that kind of respect and care for both our employees and our people and our properties. You know, it's not just about turning profits. It's just not about turning in as many people as possible. It's about really being a good community partner and trying to provide for the entire community. And here it's just... it's all about the dollar.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I went to check out of the hotel earlier, and they wouldn't even give me a bottle of water. So, oh, no, we don't. It's just a name and a number, right? Just cycle them through. Let's talk a little bit about sports betting in California. And that's an issue nationwide, and I can't get over, you know, like Super Bowl, you know, the commercials on television, and you see the odds, lines, and all. It's just, it's a completely new world with regard to sports betting. And where do you see the opportunities most, not only for your tribe, but other California gaming tribes?
I think the central opportunity with sports betting is to continue to maintain exclusivity in California as the operator, to continue to protect the industry that we built over the last 30 years. Everybody has their eye on sports betting right now, as you mentioned. California is the largest market. Naturally, there's a lot of attention there. But for us, at the end of the day, it's to maintain and further what we've created from the ground up, from literally nothing. So that's the important part for me, is really to hold that kind of narrative in place as we look at this expansion of gaming.
Let's talk a little bit about your community, the Morongo Band of Indians. Tell us where you folks are located geographically. Tell us about your membership and a little bit about the culture of your people, too.
So the Morongo Band of Mission Indians were located in Southern California, about 25 miles west of Palm Springs, right along the I-10 freeway. And Morongo, our ties to gaming go back to the very beginning. So we were one of the two tribes involved in the Cabazon case that led to the creation of the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act. So we've been in this from the very beginning. As you can hear in our name, we're the Morongo Band of Mission Indians, so we're actually made up of several different tribes in the area. Prominently the Serrano tribe and the Cahuilla tribe, and there's a few others mixed in there. Like a lot of other tribes, kind of removed from our normal land basis and forced into this area. But we continue to have a very, very vibrant, strong culture. We have a school that we built up from the ground up that now language is the center of that school. That's the core focus of that school, and it's amazing to see. I'm very fortunate to have three young kids, and they all go to the school, and they come home and they're talking to me in Serrano or in Cahuilla and asking me questions about different words and things and pronunciation. And it just warms my heart every time they come home. It's super excited to tell me about the new word they learned or something like that.
And your family, your children, do they understand what you do with regard to not only serving your tribe, but also other tribal nations there in California? And when you come home at the end of the day and you're no longer chairman, you're just dad, what do you guys like to do?
My two oldest are boys, and then my little one's a little girl. And so they just are like my whole world. So my oldest is really heavily into sports. He's obsessed with sports. He wants to play everything, and he's quite a great natural athlete, so that's really great. My middle son has this new kind of obsession with collecting coins, just antique coins, and it reminded me I had an old coin collection from when I was a kid that I had completely forgot about, and I pulled it out for him, and he was just so excited about it. It's tough with all of the travel and the meetings and everything. But when I'm home, I try to be home as much as possible. It's not always so easy. You know, phone calls never stop. But I try to make sure I'm there. I participate with them in all their activities, coaching my son's basketball and baseball teams the last 2 years. Because, you know, my wife and kids, that's really the my bedrock. You know, it's the place I go to be able to get recharged, to be able to continue to do the work that we do day in and day out here in Indian Country.
Now, like I asked Chairman Alejandre earlier, you know, he's been serving since the age of 25. And when you go to meetings, when you have big events and such, and you meet with, you know, officials, federal officials or state officials, do they ever respond to you and just be like, geez, you look really young? Or do they ever just ask you, you know, about your age and maybe in some way just kind of question whether you've got the credentials or the credibility to be a tribal leader like you are?
It definitely has happened. And it's something you have to overcome. I always have, I pull a little Trump card out of my back pocket and start talking about education, because I was fortunate enough to go to Columbia University in New York City. So I'll pull out the Ivy League card on him if I have to. And that kind of changes the direction of the conversation. I'm like, oh, okay, we weren't prepared for that. It's not as like a braggadocious thing or anything, but when you're in those kind of spaces with those elected officials, it does shift their kind of perspective of you. Because as you mentioned, coming in young, tribal leader, they're like, do you really understand what we're talking about here today? And so you have to kind of do that sometimes, not all the time. But I think once you meet with them, and, you know, we had amazing leaders on to the call today, once you're with those kind of people in the room, you know that they know what they're doing immediately. But then, you know, 30 seconds of talking, they're like, okay, you understand what you're doing here.
We also heard from Chairwoman Picard talk about the water challenges that the Bishop Paiute tribe faces. And I imagine you folks there in Morongo are experiencing some similar issues.
You know, we've actually been very fortunate that we have actually massive water reserves underneath the reservation. So, I mean, it's always an issue, but we've been very fortunate to have the access to water and be able to make sure that we have that for both our communities, other local communities. We provide wastewater treatment services for the surrounding communities that didn't have any access to that kind of service before. So we've been really kind of fortunate with our access to water. And now we know that we're going to have enough water for our next 5, 6, 7 generations. So we are quite happy with our situation as far as water is concerned.
That's good to hear. What about some other issues in California? You know, it's a huge, huge state, both geographically, also a very, very large population. And, you know, just on the national political scene, you know, there's a lot of talk about California with regard to the homeless crisis in this country and other economic issues. And where does your tribe, where does the Morongo Band fit into some of those larger issues there in the state?
Yeah, I mean, so you mentioned homelessness. Access to healthcare is a big one that goes across the state. Moving towards kind of renewable green energy projects is a big kind of push now in California, and we've really focused on that as well. We try to do our best to be partners, not just with the local communities, but with those places that provide those services. So we've donated some large funds to the local hospital that really was falling into disrepair. And in the local town next to the reservation, there's not another hospital for another 45 miles. So if you have an emergency, that was your only choice. And that's the main hospital that served our community. So we found it very important to be able to provide, you know, better access to healthcare for the community. As far as homelessness, it is in different cities, it is just on borderline epidemic levels. And hopefully we can find solutions, but it is getting to a point where some places it is getting very scary about how many people are homeless. And also one thing that doesn't get talked about enough is how many people are very close to being on the streets, who are maybe one emergency away, one, you know, job loss away. And it's scary. Like, you look at some of the statistics and 20-30% of the population are maybe one paycheck away from potentially being homeless in California, which is terrifying. And there needs to be some solutions. And I don't know if the state is ready to actually address those solutions in a real way.
Well, I'm looking across here and I see Chairwoman Picard and I see Chairman Alejandro, and they're shaking their heads because I imagine they see the similar issues there with homelessness in their part of the state. And Do you feel there's any role for tribal nations with regard to addressing some of those crises? Or, I mean, do you ever have camps like, you know, on tribal lands or nearby tribal lands? Any of you, perhaps? Chairwoman Picard, please go ahead and chime in.
Yeah, unfortunately, we have people, drug dealers, who are actually coming in and squatting on land and or taking advantage of tribal members who can't develop on their land, so they're coming in and giving them money to stay there. And so we're starting to see that as a growing problem on our reservation. And again, because of the area being landlocked, there's nowhere for people to live. So not just, you know, drug dealers doing that, but families, you know, a tent camp kind of glamping tent popped up by my land assignment. And it's a mom and a husband and 2 children, and they just have nowhere else to go. So I definitely see that right on our reservation all the time.
Okay, and Chairman Alejandro, would you like to chime in on that at all? Or any thoughts? Okay, all right. Well, you know, we're winding down the show here. Let's think about the future and what that holds. And Chairman Siva, like our other guests here, you know, you're just getting started, I feel, in your career, but you've already achieved so much. So what else do you hope to accomplish in the years moving forward?
Yeah, so actually this year at WIGC at the Sinaga Conference, I took the opportunity to announce that I will be running for the vice chairman spot of the Indian Gaming Association at the annual conference in April. I'm very excited for the opportunity to take kind of the work that we've done in California and take that to the national level to, you know, bring some of that consensus building, some of that unified voice to that national level, which I think has been, you know, starting to slowly kind of fade away over the last decade or so. And I think, you know, Chairman Drew mentioned the Tribal Leadership Council and the focus on the next generation. And I think you really have to show an example of what you can do as a young leader, that you can step up to that national level, that you can have that voice, that you can do that. And so I'm trying to put action behind those words and not just say, you know, good speeches and make, you know, argumentative points, but actually do the work and try to do the work. So that's what I'm looking for in the future. Similar to Chairman Drew, I might have my eye on the assembly somewhere down the road as well. There's been lots of conversations about that. So there's always new opportunities. It's exciting times.
And are there ever mornings or evenings when you come home from work and think to yourself, what did I get myself into? Why? And when that happens, what do you do? What do you say?
Yeah, there are definitely those moments for sure. Sometimes I'll be sitting in a meeting and be like, what am I doing here? But then you remember, you know, you look out in the faces and you see some of those people who believed in you to get you into that spot. You know, I think about my wife, I think about my kids, and remember why you're doing the work. It's not so much for yourself, it's for everyone else. Like Chairwoman Picard said, very much view myself as a servant leader, there to give back, there to serve. But, you know, the grind can wear you down, but you just have to remember why you're doing it. And I think if you've got good intentions, you can always find that kind of next level of energy to keep going.
Well, Vice Chairman Siva, we're just about out of time, so I want to thank you also for joining us here today. And safe travels home, and just much success and goodwill going forward.
Thank you so much, and it was great being here with you today. Very much thankful for the opportunity. Thank you.
And I appreciate all of you for coming in here. I know it's early. I know we've all got to get on the road and get home. So safe travels. And again, to our guest today, Chairwoman Meryl Picard, Chairman Drew Alejandre, and Vice Chairman James Siva, big thanks. And again, to all of our 40 Under 40 awardees, you all inspire us in more ways than you can imagine. So we're going to have to go ahead and wrap up our show now. And to our listeners, we'll be back again tomorrow. We'll be back in the old studio. We're going to pack it up and head home from Las Vegas. And we'll be talking about the lasting repercussions of Indigenous women who were sterilized without their consent. The practice mostly died off decades ago, but there are some recent cases. Until then, I'm your host, Sean Spruce.
Support provided by Amerind. Amerind is 100% tribally owned and partners with tribes and their businesses to provide affordable commercial insurance coverage, protect tribal sovereignty, and strengthen Native American communities by helping to keep dollars in Indian country. Information about property, liability, commercial auto, and workers' comp available at Amerind.com. That's AMERIND.com.
Haumitake Piki. Celebrate National Nutrition Month. Choose healthier food options for you and your loved ones. Sometimes it can be difficult to make good food choices, but there are many resources that can help. For more information, visit ihs.gov/diabetes or call 1-800-318-2596. A message from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Ho, hechetuelo.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.